Hey everybody, and welcome to another edition of Monday Night Live. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Fightful's very own, my favourite American at this very second, Sean Ross Sapp. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. That's not a very high benchmark because America kind of sucks right now.
I'm not American, so I probably don't have as much of a right to say it, but from an outside perspective, it looks like it does. So
yeah, happy Canadian Thanksgiving, everybody.
It's just as much of a shit show over here, if that helps you, just in different ways.
Yeah, fair, yeah.
We had our government today put an ad to tell everybody in the arts that they need to get another job. And just, they had this like photo of like a ballet dancer, and it was her like taking her shoe off, and it's like, Fatima could work in cyber. She just doesn't know it yet.
My God.
And you're like, I don't think Fatima wants to be honest. And the irony that they probably had to use people from the arts to make that ad is not lost on me. But anyway, how was your weekend?
It was really good. Very relaxing. I watched with my wife, I watched Haunting of Bly Manor on Netflix, and I took in some of The Collective and saw one of the greatest UFC knockouts of all time. It was a pretty solid weekend.
That's not a bad weekend as weekends go. I've watched the drag queens Trixie Mattel and Katia review Haunting in Bly Manor on and it looks pretty fun. Is it scary?
I wouldn't say scary. It's actually more of a love story than it is a horror story, but I think that's the interesting aspect of it, is how they weave all of those in together. And I used to not be much of a horror movie guy, and then I became one like, okay, I'll only watch it if it could plausibly happen because I can suspend my disbelief. Now, if just the writing is really good, I'll pretty well enjoy it. And the first season of this, Haunting of Hill House, which was, it's an anthology, so it's different every season. It was really good, so I was excited to watch this, and we got it in a couple days. I really enjoyed it.
I've started watching on Netflix Ratchet with Sarah Paulson, and that's pretty great.
My wife has the week off from school or from work. She's a teacher, and she's actually watching that downstairs right now.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I'm like three episodes in. Apparently, it's one of those ones that you think you know what's happening, and then something else happens, and it just keeps you guessing all the time. But you said you got to check out some of The Collective. What did you get to check out?
I got to watch for the culture. I got to watch a bit of Bloodsport and about half of, I got to watch some of Black Label Pro and half of Spring Break. Spring Break show is a long one. It is a very long one. It's like 4.5 hours. So trying to take it all in, cheap plug for Fightful.com, FightfulSelect.com. We do a podcast on Fightful Select every single week because a lot of people say, oh, why don't you cover NWA, Ring of Honor, Impact, 205, UK, all that stuff, indie wrestling on post-show reviews. Steven Jensen actually does. He does like a weekly wrap-up of that on FightfulSelect.com. And because this weekend was such a big one, I hit him up and I was like, you know what, let's make that a free preview. That way maybe people that don't know about that show can check it out. So I encourage everybody to do that. It'll be up on Fightful.com today.
How was Joey Janela and Ricky Morton in the end? I've not had a chance to check it out. Was it good?
Actually, really good. It was like 12, 13 minutes, and Ricky Morton, like you would assume that he's just one of those guys that shows up, gets his paycheck. He very much knew what he was getting into, and yeah, I like that. And it seems like anybody that ends up working Joey Janela on one of those shows does, because I mean, Marty Jannetty did that too a few years ago. He very much knew what he was getting into and had an interesting match. There were just, yeah, I think it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's good to see that these shows are back. I know that Sondra was watching Effie's Big Gay Brunch, where she got to see, I think it was Cassandra against Sunny Kiss.
So I heard it. I haven't got to see it yet. Everybody keeps telling me that's like a must-watch thing this week. So I really got to see that.
Yeah, it's great that I feel like for people who are not WWE or AEW fans, or I guess New Japan fans, like they've maybe been starved for like a long time of stuff, and this felt like their big weekend. We had Keith Elliott Greenberg, who obviously writes for the Inside the Ropes magazine, and he was there, had a booth, said it was a really good atmosphere in Indiana, and people were really happy to be there. They were most people were adhering to the social distancing and the masks. So, hopefully people
heard,
had
heard a
fun.
lot of good things about that. I would love to see the collective run twice a year. I'd like to see them run like WrestleMania time and then in the fall like this. I think this proved that there was an appetite for it. And yeah, it highlights a lot of people. There are some people that I hope get more of a highlight, like Jody Threat. I wanted to see her in a few more things. I got to see her do some stuff in Toronto, and she had some bookings, but it was mainly battle royals, five ways, six ways. There are some people that are really going to start to stand out. And I'm so glad that Effie finally got to do his show, because just awesome. Awesome.
So I mean, there's also before we talk about the stories, as we usually do, we should talk a little bit about the weekend. So we had the first night of the WWE draft on SmackDown, and one of the big stories coming out of it was they broke up. Well, I don't know if you say they broke up. Part of the New Day had been moved to Raw. Part of them are on SmackDown. They still seem to be the New Day, but they're on different brands. I know there have been sort of rumors that this might happen. What do you think of this move? Because, I mean, it's kind of dividing opinions. Some people like it. Some people hate it. What did you think when it all played out on Friday night?
The split, I don't mind at all. I mind them not making sense of it. They've got to make sense of it. And they have time to do that. And I reacted, and all these people are like, oh, well, maybe Raw just wanted the tag champions. And Big E's got a single. No, that's not an explanation. Big E working singles matches is not an explanation. Do not excuse that. I'm telling you guys, do not excuse things that make sense. That's why you get a dumber wrestling program. This doesn't have to be high art. It doesn't have to be Breaking Bad or The Wire or something like that. But a baseline should be make sense of it. And they can, because the first thing that Michael Cole said on Friday was they have taken superstar considerations into factor. They were in the draft pool together, all three of them. Realistically, there is no reason for Raw to not take all three and then say, well, you know what? We don't really want Big E. We'll trade him to SmackDown. And there's a lot of people that say stuff like, oh, well, they can't trade for draft picks. Says who? It's a fake show. They can do whatever they want. They do whatever they want all the time without it making sense. What I would prefer is if Monday or Friday we hear that either Big E, Kofi, or Xavier, preferably Kofi, pushed for this, that he went to USA and Fox and said, draft us separately, sort of to force Big E to do this. Because if you remember, he's the one that gave Big E his blessing.
Yeah,
that's the one. He gave Big E his blessing, and he said, you got to do this. You did it for me. You supported me. I want to support you. Xavier looked very, very surprised. I think that would be a very story-rich thing to have Kofi, the elder statesman of the New Day, who has been to the mountaintop in WWE, for him to have done that to kind of force Big E to fulfill his singles potential, and Xavier to be like, well, man, I liked what we had going on. This adds some intrigue. They don't have to split. They don't have to fight, any of that. I think this can launch a good story, but WWE has not ever given me a reason to give them the benefit of the doubt. I hope they prove me wrong, but they've never given me the reason to give them a benefit of the doubt on stuff like this. They got to make sense of it. Then I'll be okay with it.
Yeah, you want sense of the story. There's a kind of beautiful heartbreak to that if they do tell that story, with Kofi sort of saying, you need to go and do this on your own now. You have to fly away from the New Day nest. I guess we need to do it. You're right, though. Like, wrestling shows should just make sense. It's like, whether it's this or whether it's, you know, Matt Hardy saying he's going away and then he's been on TV every week. Like, just make the things make sense, and then we will enjoy what's supposed to happen. Any draft picks that surprise? I mean, there wasn't really anything groundbreaking on Friday in terms of people going from one show to the other. Is there anything you want to see tonight on Raw in terms of big moves from one brand to another?
Apollo Crews to be away from the Hurt Business forever. Oh my God. One of the stats that I keep putting out there, Apollo Crews has had 15 straight matches against the Hurt Business. He has not faced anybody else since June. And I mean the middle of June. So for the last 4 months, he has done nothing but face the Hurt Business. And it is hurting business right now. It ain't good. It is really rough. And as I look up and down the pools, I kind of wanted to see Bayley and Sasha split, but Sasha's already on SmackDown. To me, I would have probably swapped them around and had Bayley in the Friday pool. I think that adds more intrigue. I want to know what happens with Mercedes Martinez since she doesn't want to be a part of Retribution anymore. I don't know if she'll be she's listed in the draft pool. I don't know how that'll work. But I want to see what tag teams go to SmackDown. Right now, a bunch of the tag teams are on Raw. Right now, really, we only have Rey and Dominic on SmackDown. And I've saw people say, oh, well, maybe tag team wrestling will just be on Raw. That's a dumb idea. That is a dumb, one-dimensional idea that they will go back on within a few months if they do it. Tag team wrestling is important. It's different. It's an attraction. I want to see it on both brands. I actually wrote for WrestleTalk Magazine, and I said it seems like they're leaning towards unifying the titles. And to me, it's sad that I'm like, oh, okay, if you have to. Because that's their own doing. It's their own inept booking that led to that, as opposed to, hey, let's make this creatively satisfying and make it good. No, they just do the same thing over and over again. I want to see new teams form and develop, and it ain't looking promising right now.
I always remember something that Lance Storm said on one of his shows with Brian Alvarez, and it kind of stuck with me. He was talking about when they... Because remember WrestleMania 19, like, in particular, had a really bad buy rate? Compared to like the one before, and like that was a really good card. And he said one of the things that he thought was hurtful was having two sets of world champions and having two sets of tag champions. It's like, well, you know, you want to go, who's the tag champs or who's the world champ or whatever. So I am very much in the mindset I want them to unify the tag titles. I really do. I think that would be much better. But for what you're saying, for good story reasons, not just because you don't care about tag team wrestling and you're going to just continue to not care about it, but with one belt. I think that by having, you know, champions who can be on both shows and make it feel more special, I think that's probably the way to go. But the last time they unified the titles, Carlito and Primo were defending them on the WrestleMania pre-show, so I'm not holding out the highest hope.
It didn't go so well the last time they did it, and it's supposed to make it more important, but they minimize it. They minimize the stakes for so much stuff, like the women's tag titles. That shouldn't have been a throwaway Raw. I mean, it's okay if the match was on Raw like it was this past week, but it's a championship match that they had set for pay-per-view, and they're like, ah, let's end it in like 5 or 6 minutes while we spend 3 hours searching for something that people might possibly care about. They need to maximize the stakes on their show very badly.
Well, yeah, I guess we'll see where things go on the second part of the draft tonight. I did want to ask you, actually, did you have any thoughts on the 30 Years of Jericho special last week? There was cameos galore with everyone from Slash to Dennis Miller to everybody in between, Tanahashi. Like, there was loads of cameos. Did you like the thread they had through Dynamite last week?
I love the cameos. I thought the main event was not great. not great. And let me tell you, Luther is one of the all-time nice guys in wrestling, but that wasn't smooth. They should have probably kept that on a taped edition of AEW. But I love the cameos. I thought those were really great.
Yeah, I thought the show was really good. I've been kind of... I think the thing with Luther is that, like, Jericho has been a great pal to him. Like, he really is. He's really helping, but it's a big ask to go from kind of on Dark and stuff to the main event of Dynamite. It's a big jump, but, you know, I get, because how Luther's like, he must be close to, is he close to 50 or something? He's almost Jericho's age, right? He's been around since the early 90s.
He's older. He's like 51.
Ah. You know, good for him getting a payday. Good for him. Anyway, so let's move on to the stories of the week. The first one we're going to talk about is the New Japan and AEW relationship going off of those. The cameos, one of them was Tanahashi. There was lots of references on Dynamite last week to Moxley and Archer's match from earlier this year in New Japan. Is there a relationship? Is there anything to the rumors that people are clamoring and hoping for?
Well, there's a lot of people that in AEW that want it to happen. I spent the last couple of weeks, really since Harold May was taken out of his role or announced that he would be out of his role, asking people in New Japan and AEW. The ones that haven't worked in Japan, they weren't that worried about it. They're like, yeah, you know, but I don't think that they're that concerned about it because they're not going to get paid off of it. But it was widely known by people in AEW that there were hurt feelings on both sides of the, I don't want to say the EVP specifically, but a lot of the people who left New Japan for AEW and New Japan, there were a lot of hurt feelings involved, both based on those people leaving, how things were handled, how they were booked on the way out, because they wanted to maintain a positive relationship, and that just didn't happen. And there was a top talent that said that Harold May being out will not hurt things, and that most of the roster is still in touch with people in New Japan, even people that are high up in New Japan, and that there wasn't a ton of belief in Harold May, but that Tony Khan has done his best to make it amicable. Now, I don't know if Khan has a personal relationship with Harold, but one of the wrestlers I talked to said that they did, and they didn't want to do business with Harold anymore. And that's from a former New Japan star. And they pointed at the contracts that Tony Khan has, I don't want to say Tony Khan, but AEW has offered wrestlers. You look at Moxley working New Japan. Look at FTR. They have that option. They've said it at that much, at least. Chris Jericho has been able to do that. That forbidden door is only like a one-way door as long as Harold May at least was in control. AEW does not have to structure their contracts to allow for people to work in Japan, but they have and they do, and I think that says a lot. That shows to me that they are open to that. And there was one person in New Japan said, I don't know why we wouldn't do it. It's more money for New Japan. It's more money for AEW and for the wrestlers. It helps everyone. It hurts no one except maybe Ring of Honor.
I mean, I guess the good thing is there's time to build that relationship, given that nobody can really go to Japan or come from Japan for the next little while, let's say.
Well, I mean, some people have been making their way over there. I mean, they found ways over there, apparently, because, I mean, Jeff Cobb.
I meant more people who are on AEW. Like, if you're Moxley or something, like, if you've got to be at Dynamite every Wednesday or something, that, like, it might be harder for you to get over. Because I assume that Cobb needed to quarantine and stuff when he got there.
I'm sure he did. Yeah, and also the fact that New Japan effectively launched a brand split because they were forced to with New Japan USA. That I get the feeling they aren't going to be eager to just put that on hold either. And the New Japan USA thing, as good as the content has been, is not the profile of what AEW is or that of a partnership quality. I would personally expect New Japan to be open to working with a lot more people. I think a lot of those restrictions are going to kind of die down. I mean, as far as who they'll do business with, not as far as quarantine and COVID and all that. I think that they are open to a lot more right now, because I think there were also a lot of people that saw the benefit of working with AEW from the start, because quite frankly, no disrespect to anybody in Ring of Honor, but that is not the relationship you want to maintain if you're picking between Omega, the Bucks, Cody, Jericho, all those guys, and Ring of Honor. I mean,
yeah, and even if you look at it from the perspective of AEW, if they were able to get, you know, Okada or even Minoru Suzuki or Tanahashi or Osprey, like all these names who you could bring in, it feels like that would definitely be a much better fit than, like you say, no offense to ROH. Now, here, you might know the answer to this, because I'm sure. Do you remember when Ring of Honor initially announced Madison Square Garden the first time?
Yes.
I am positive. I've never been able to find it. On the original graphic for that show, were Cody and the Bucks and Omega not on that graphic?
Were, because they were still under contract.
Yeah, because I feel like that was part of the sale of that show. And I wonder if New Japan were to go back to Madison Square Garden, you know, it feels like adding an AEW relationship where you can maybe get a couple of those guys on that show down the line when you're able to do that, just seems like such an easy fit, or not the right fit, I should say.
And New Japan is, I mean, they were supposed to go there this year, but they postponed their show until next year. For the Wrestle Dynasty thing, but if you bring Ring of Honor there, it's just not going to draw. If you bring AEW there, it will draw. I mean, we know what it can draw in Chicago. We know what it can draw in Las Vegas. Now, who knows what anything will draw next year, but that original MSG show changed wrestling. Really, I mean, that's what got WWE to step out and finally sign Matt Riddle. They kept him on ice for 2.5 years, pulling him around with Evolve, saying, oh, well, you know what, maybe one day, because they found a bag of weed that he was holding up on a photo shoot one time. When New Japan and Ring of Honor announced that, they're like, you know what, we should probably get him under contract. That was also the week they reached back out to Hulk Hogan as well, because from what I understand, they didn't want him even as much as going out and waving in front of a Madison Square Garden crowd for somebody else. That changed a lot of things for a lot of people. I just don't think that without Omega, Young Bucks, Cody, any of those people, under the impression that they would end up working there, that would have sold anywhere near as well as it did.
Well, I guess we'll see where the relationship goes with New Japan and AEW. Watch this space. Up next, let's talk about the return of Lars Sullivan from SmackDown this past Friday. He returned and obviously battered Jeff Hardy and Matt Riddle and all those guys. I think people were quite surprised to see Lars Sullivan back, and I think a lot of people kind of forgot about him.
Yeah, they did, and really, that's the best thing that could have happened to Lars Sullivan, because let's be real, even through this weekend, the guy, as introverted as I hear he is, seems to find himself in controversy an awful lot. There was heat on him last year over the racial comments that he had made prior to his signing, but I also had several WWE wrestlers that had reached out to me and said that he made an effort to explain himself and apologize. So he got his punishment for that. You can decide amongst yourselves whether or not you feel like that punishment is justified. But, you know, the stuff from, quite frankly, the porn video that emerged earlier this year, I was told there was no heat about that. I'm not sure if anybody even reached out to him about it, but I was told there was no heat about that, but that obviously Vince McMahon would look at him a little bit differently as a result, because he didn't exactly disclose that when he signed with the company. And that is the type of thing they ask you to disclose if you've participated in any type of content like that. But when he went down last year, the company immediately had him on injury reports as being back in June 2020. I know that he thought that he wasn't going to be out that long because he had dealt with knee injuries in the past and knee surgeries in the past, and he was telling them, oh, I'll be back way sooner than that. I'll be ready way sooner than that. That wasn't the case at all. There was a rehab video he posted in December, and I don't know if you guys remember, he was like doing medicine balls or something in the gym, and a lot of people were like, oh, he's ready to come back. No, he was not. That was just typical rehab stuff. And he was way behind schedule because he had to get both knees fixed. And there was a real question, like, will this guy be able to come back from this? Will he be able to make it back? And that outlook from him went from, like, less than a year to, okay, maybe I'll be back when WWE said I was going to be back in a year. Then it became pretty clear when he got both knees worked on and fixed and it was going kind of slow that this is going to probably take 16, 18 months. And WWE had big plans for him. Before the mental breakdown that he had last year, he was tentatively planned for Brock Lesnar down the line. But at this point, man, the guy, for whether it's self-inflicted or not, has been through just an insane amount over the last 2 years.
And sometimes it's just best to put your phone down is the message I think a lot of people need to get. Yeah. And then we've spoken on the podcast before about Ben Carter and his appearances in AEW, interest in WWE. What is the latest on him?
So I mentioned yesterday when I was doing the little teaser for Monday Night Live that I was going to concurrently break some news here in FightfulSelect.com. I've heard that NXT UK has made a big play for Ben Carter. And as of right now, that's probably where he'll land. I don't want to speak for him, but I've got people in NXT UK that think that it's a done deal. It is not a done deal, but they think that it's as good as a done deal. This is pretty important for a few reasons. Ben Carter did AEW spots that got a lot of buzz. I mean, I don't know that any match on Dark has gotten the buzz that his match with Lee Johnson did since maybe the Omega Moxley match. And this is from two guys that I don't want to say are relative unknowns, but they are relative unknowns. And the interesting thing is, Impact was kind of ahead of the curve there because they had a match in the can with him that dropped today with Chris Sabin from months ago. So they had a look at him. I know that NXT had reached out, and I don't know if he was planned for a visit or what was supposed to go down, but then he got the COVID diagnosis that slowed everything up. He straight up told me on the record he did not get paid to do his AEW show because he couldn't. His visa status prevented it. So it makes all the sense in the world to me that in the middle of COVID, when it's hard to get people visas, it's hard to make that happen, that he would go to the place where he could legally get paid the quickest. We've heard that NXT has been offering short-term deals. I don't know anything about that. I'm just told that it's still a long process yet, but that NXT UK is making a real play for him, and that people in NXT UK seem to think that they've got it in the bag. I can't say that it is in the bag, but they think it is.
I mean, it's interesting because they are making there's a lot of people they're making plays for NXT UK to really amp up the star power and amp up the buzz of that show, which is quite a smart move because otherwise it's probably going to be the seventh or eighth wrestling show in order of the importance of what you'd want to watch.
Yeah, I mean, no disrespect to the people on that show, but I'm watching Raw, SmackDown, NXT, AEW, AEW Dark, Impact Wrestling, and probably Ring of Honor before NXT UK. MLW is not running right now, but it might be behind them too, because if you look at MLW, you can say what you want about what they pay people. It's very clear there's a track record there that when you pop up on MLW, you pop up on WWE's radar as well. They've signed away Humberto, Swerve Scott, Angel Garza, and then like a lot of people have ended up in AEW. So when I look at that, it's like, okay, they've got a higher hit rate for their roster members appearing on Raw, SmackDown, and AEW than NXT UK does at this point. And quite honestly, I mean, I called NXT UK the bearded European white guy show for a long time because everybody looks the same on the show. They need something a little bit different. They need something fresh to draw people in that, you know, don't really care.
And well, hopefully, I mean, you're right though. Ben Carter does have a buzz about him after the AEW match, and you know, it's smart for them to capitalize on it. So,
and if that's the case, I just want to say, how ironic is it? Britt Baker got him booked there by showing Tony Khan his stuff. That was also said about Wardlow, and Kylie Rae told me the same thing. So Britt Baker has recruited talent to AEW, but has basically recruited talent for NXT UK, Impact Wrestling, and AEW now since Kylie Rae moved on. That poor girl, like, she gives everybody these recommendations that deserve it, by the way. They all three deserve it. But a lot of them end up going somewhere else.
She's got a career in scouting once this is all said and done. But yeah, so and we'll have more stories next week, as always. Just wanted, before we move on to listener questions, let you guys know, as always, if you're in the UK, we still have the Beer 52 offer going on, so you can get in on that if you want and get 8 free beers crafted, sourced, and curated from the best breweries on the planet for free. All you need to do is...
Free?
Free! You don't need to pay a penny. Well, you do. You need to pay the postage, which is £5.95. But that's the cost of one beer. And the thing is, because of our government, you can't go to a pub anymore. So this is a way for you to get beers to your house, and not just like the regular beers. These are like craft beers that are different. They're from different countries. America, Korea, Africa, and all across the world. Beer 52 are an independent British company. They're passionate about the UK craft beer scene. They've supported them during COVID, which is really important. So check it out. You can get dark beer, light beer, lots of options, and if you do change your mind once you set up an account, you can pause or cancel your account at any time. Just go to beer52.com/ITR. That's beer and then the number 52.com/ITR. So, we've got loads of listener questions, Sean, as always. I ended up asking them on Twitter and Facebook, which I think was a mistake because now there are tons of them. But yeah. We'll go quickfire. We can do this.
Yeah.
So, okay, John Adams, he wants to know, providing they were to build both perfectly, hey, we can dream, who would you rather see Roman fight at WrestleMania, The Rock or a superface Big E? He says, also love the new podcast, guys.
This WrestleMania, The Rock, because I think The Rock's time is, I think it's like next year, maybe the year after, or never. I think there's more story there. And it is one of those rare instances where a celebrity main event makes perfect sense from a booking standpoint because of the family. I love Big E. That if they went the Big E route, I'd be like, yeah, sure. That's great. That's awesome. I'd be ecstatic. But
those are the same story.
Yes, correct.
Not Andrea on Twitter wants to know, cushions on the bed, yes or no?
Cushions on the bed?
Do you like the idea of cushions on the bed on top of the pillows or not?
I mean, for decoration, sure, but...
I always remember this movie, Along Came Polly, with Ben Stiller and Jennifer Aniston, and ever since Ben Stiller explained the amount of time that he spent taking the cushions on and off the bed, I've immediately became no to cushions, so...
Yeah, I'm there.
Anyway, Francis Reyes wants to know, who would have been... So obviously on Friday, the number one and two picks were Drew and Roman, because they're the world champions, makes sense. Who would both of our number three draft picks have been? Mine's would have been Asuka, for sure.
Mine probably would have been... Well, okay, so it can't be Bayley. Let me look at the draft results really quick, because I think that Asuka would have probably been my number three pick, based on the way that everything unfolded. Because, I mean, she's the women's champion. It just makes a lot of sense to go that way. Yeah, I'm going Asuka. You gotta portray your champions as being the most important.
Yeah, I was an absolute idiot watching the show live at 1 a.m. going, why is nobody picking Bayley? And then I tweeted it and people were like, because she's on Monday's pool, you idiot. Yeah, pretty much. And then I was like...
Whoever came up with the idea to split the pools, that was brilliant. I love that because in the 2016 draft, everything happened the first night. Whatever, no reason to watch Raw. Splitting the draft pools was brilliant. Also, what that does is it makes more wrestlers seem more important. Naomi getting drafted in like the second round, that makes her look better. That makes her look really better. I mean, it doesn't make any sense why she was picked before New Day, especially collectively, but you also have more number one picks. You have more first round picks that make people seem more important. Because, I mean, that is a good thing to do, especially before WWE books them all to hell right after.
I also love I'm with you. I love the draft pool thing. And I also love the idea of, you know, if you don't get drafted in those first picks, that you're a free agent. I really like that story. So,
yes.
I mean, if only for my blind hope that Shorty G ditches it and becomes Chad Gable and goes to NXT, it's pretty much the one hope.
I want all four of them to. I want Metalik and Lindsay to go to NXT. I want Mickey to go to NXT and Gable. I want them all four there because NXT's hurting right now. I mean, there was a lot of frustration backstage in NXT this past Wednesday, and most people understood it. They're like, man, even when you got people sympathizing with the higher-ups, it's a pretty bad situation. And they lost Ridge Holland, Finn Balor, Kyle O'Reilly, and Tegan Nox in a couple weeks, plus all the call-ups. Maybe getting Mercedes Martinez back helps, but they need some reinforcements on NXT.
Yeah, you got a feel for them. Glenn Fraser wants to know, do you think two Royal Rumble matches as we know them can conceivably and logistically happen amidst a global pandemic?
Yeah, just probably limited crowds. Yeah, I mean, they got all those people there. They'll do it.
Yeah, as long as they're kind of testing people and taking care of it. And, you know, because, yeah. I assume it's going to be... I mean, I'm trying to think, have they had that many people backstage at one time? Maybe not, actually. Maybe now, maybe for Raw or SmackDown now, they would have that many people backstage.
I think they'll do it. I really do.
Zachary Marsh wants to know, why is WWE breaking up all the tag teams? I feel bad for Tucker and Otis. I feel like Tucker and Otis is the one that I actually do understand. Like, I understand the majority of the rest of them not being the best decision, but, like, Otis basically feels like the star of the team. But I think Tucker's chances on Monday Night Raw are just very, very low. You've got a feel for the guy.
Yeah, and he's worked really hard and improved a whole lot. They've teamed together for over 4 years. Otis has lost so much steam since the crowds have gone. Like, so much of him depended on those crowds, and now it just ain't happening. I don't know why they're splitting up teams. I hate it. I love tag team wrestling. Tag team wrestling can be an attraction. I wish they wouldn't do it.
We've also got Robert Fletcher, who says, which wrestler do you think gave the worst acting performance in a movie? My pick is RVD in Wrong Side of Town. Moppy was less wooden in that performance.
Yeah, that's got to be it. Rob Van Dam in Wrong Side of Town is one of the worst that I have ever seen.
I've never seen it. Is it so bad that it's worth me watching it or not?
Yes, it is. He even does the pick a hand gimmick from... Like, he writes that in. Now, the funny thing is, on the cover of that is Dave Bautista, who is not in that movie that much. Ja Rule, who is barely in it. Like, it's got a lot of interesting names. Stormy Daniels, the porn star.
Jesus.
Who is, yeah. How about this? Viscera is in that movie. Who else? Omarion from B2K. The old music group.
Wow. Like, I probably need to try and check it out.
Yeah, it's so bad you got to watch it.
So obviously, anybody who knows me knows my favorite wrestler growing up was Hulk Hogan. And, you know, I've got a life-size cardboard cutout of him in my room that I got as a Christmas present. My office, should I say. But like every year, and I love Christmas, every year I try to watch Santa with Muscles and I can never get through it. Like I every year get about a third of the way in and I just think, this is not getting me in the mood for Christmas. So I feel like that's by default the worst acting performance because I can't even finish it.
Yeah, it's so bad. He's so bad at everything.
What is your favorite Hulk Hogan lie?
My favorite Hulk Hogan lie?
Mine has to be when, I think it was Jericho's book, where he said that there was they did a live event in Hawaii and The Rock basically offered to give Hogan and Jericho let them get on the plane and go back to LA or whatever, and they're on the flight and Hogan just turns to Rock and says, you know, you've got it lucky because in the 80s you had all this competition like Jean-Claude Van Damme and Arnold Schwarzenegger, but you know, the plan initially was for me to be the Gene Hackman of the 80s.
I think my favorite is the one where he talks about UFC wanting to hire him. Like, I think he said, like, in my prime, because at no point did the UFC ever want that to happen. I even spoke to Campbell McLaren, who said that, or who ran the UFC at that time, and he straight up said publicly, I call bullshit on that. I never wanted him in the original UFC. Who did he talk to? Because it wasn't me. And Hogan had said something like MMA was too violent and all that. And he just didn't want any part of it. Come on, man. He was not going to be in the UFC. And if he did, he would have got wrecked real bad.
I don't know. Like when he hulks up, stranger things can happen.
God. Oh, man.
Rory McNellis wants to know, if Rock isn't available to perform at Mania against Roman Reigns, then what main event could WWE realistically put on that would feel big?
Drew or Big E against Roman Reigns, but since they're doing Sasha and Bayley at Hell in a Cell, I really don't know right now. Drew against Roman seems like a pretty big one, though.
They could maybe do something with Ronda if they get her back in time. She's always a shout. But yeah, I think if it's not Rock and Roman, Ronda and Sasha, maybe? They had a great match in Royal Rumble a couple years ago.
I don't know what kind of shape Becky Lynch would be in 3 or 4 months after pregnancy, but if you had Ronda Rousey return, and almost like the Undertaker Triple H thing, where it's like, oh, Undertaker's back, and then bam, the other music hits, it's like, okay, one moment build, no words spoken. Okay, we're getting that one-on-one match, and that would work.
If anybody can do it, it's probably Becky, to be fair. Ben Williams wants to know, do you think it's a sign of WWE's trust in Sasha that she's been in all 3 Hell in a Cell matches for the women?
Yeah, she's incredible in the ring. One of my favorite people to watch.
Yeah, she's the most consistent of the horsewomen, for sure. Reese Saunders wants to know, do you think that the WWE should have unified the tag belts again? We've done this one already. Joanne McHugh wants to know, what would you say is your biggest bugbear or annoyance that never gets less annoying in modern wrestling and with modern wrestling fandom? By the way, I only explained bugbear as I used it with someone else this week and they looked to me like, sure, I was insane.
Not explaining things and then people caping for that by saying, oh, wrestling always doesn't make sense. No, if you want to excuse crap, you can excuse crap. Don't shame people who want things to make sense.
Dives.
Yeah.
I hate them so much. They have... Who, like, I was doing it when we were doing the show with JR in February, when we could be in a room with people. Oh God, I miss people in a room. So strange. Anyway, but JR was talking about, like, whoever has pinned someone from a dive?
Never.
Like,
that should be happening on Dynamite. Darby Allin should be hitting his suicide dive, rolling somebody in and pinning them.
Yeah, like, start to make it mean something. It's like, and dives are like, the thing that annoys me most about a dive is like the idea that when a dive happens, people are like, holy shit! And you're like, what? Holy shit for what? That we're continuing to just pretend like this means anything when these people do these moves? But yeah, that's mine, for sure. Paul Hodges wants to know, what do you think of the new Impact Wrestling TV deal in the UK being shown in Free Sports, which I guess, I'm trying to think what the equivalent of that would be in the US. I mean, it's on cable, essentially.
Anything is positive for them, but I mean, they don't quite have the foothold that they did once upon a time. I mean, I remember when people were talking about, oh, well, should they just move operations over there? We are a far cry from that.
Yeah, it's good for them to get a TV deal. I still struggle to understand why they don't just, like, because the company behind Impact, they've got enough money. Like, throw some big money at somebody. They just, because they've got good people. Courtney Johnson wants to know, do you think that Bayley and Sasha will have a proper match at Hell in a Cell, or is something going to happen to prolong the feud?
I think they'll have a proper match. I do. And I think that Bayley will injure her and she might be out a while. Oh God, it made so much sense for WrestleMania. It's so frustrating to me.
I'm hoping that there's going to be a reason. Like that there's something. Because you can do a match and then have another one at WrestleMania, but just let's have it make sense, please. It's the theme of this podcast for some reason this week. Make it make sense. Craig McKeegan wants to know, what did you think of the draft night? Well, we've covered that as well, but the draft. Anthony Fitzpatrick wants to know, with Jericho recently celebrating 30 years in the business, do you think he will be the last guy to achieve that feat still active full-time?
No, not at all. I think that with advances in science, technology, health, who knows what kind of schedule any wrestlers are going to be keeping from now on, but even before COVID, WWE is scaling back live events. I think that we're going to see plenty of people doing it. I mean, look, Rhea Ripley might be wrestling 50. Who knows? There's a lot of options.
Mark McKeown wants to know, Sean, from Sean's experience, does he think there is more or less of a crossover audience between wrestling and MMA now than, say, 10 years ago?
Ooh. Less than 10 years ago because Brock was still fighting or was just fresh off. Yeah, I think he was still fighting. Less than 4 years ago, even in my experience, just because there are less people watching wrestling in general. So I would say less.
And last two questions. Anthony Talarido wants to know, now that you and Sean are doing this podcast, do you two qualify to capture the QuizzleMania Tag Team Championships?
I would think so. I think that really the entire lukewarm Luke Owen thing was a way for him to conspire with Ollie to suppress the hashtag FTF movement. So do me a favor, guys. Anytime you see a Parts Fun Known video, a WrestleTalk tweet, just type in a hashtag FTF. That's all you need to say. That's all you need to say. Let them know that they know, or that you know what's up. Let them know that you want to be heard. And they should start listening to the people. Ollie is a tyrant.
Spoken like a true cult leader. And Peter Jenkins wants to know, what does AEW or NXT need to do to pull in brand new wrestling fans?
I think what AEW needs to do is to keep doing what they are doing, but make a little bit more sense of it. Like you said, the dives. Somebody tunes in for the first time and they see that, they're going to go, well, that dive was cool, but why did that happen? And so many of us are just conditioned to see it. Why aren't these people walking halfway up the ramp when they powder out of the ring? That doesn't make any sense. Why aren't they standing next to the barricade instead of right by the ring? make things make sense a little bit, because there's a higher bar for entertainment and television these days. Like, there are stupid shows like Big Bang Theory that still get a lot of viewers, but there are a lot of TV snobs out there that only want to watch high quality stuff. And to me, if you make it make sense, I'm probably going to enjoy it.
Yeah, and I think the thing with NXT that is difficult is that no matter what you do, NXT is a WWE show. So for the most part, people are going to put it below the level of what... I mean, maybe if they turned NXT into... It essentially is its own brand now. But I think people are always going to watch Raw and SmackDown more than they watch NXT. And if you want to watch indie stuff, you're probably going to watch an indie. So I think they're kind of in this weird place that I just don't really know if there's a way that they can get out of it. But that is it for us on this week's podcast. Sean, what are your plugs? Where can people find you? What's going on this week? Let people know.
FightfulSelect.com. We are working hard to move that off of Patreon onto the site, but you can always find it at FightfulSelect.com. The stories you heard about today, I broke them over at FightfulSelect.com. And I do a ton of shows, a Q&A show every single week where I answer over 100 questions. I do the Backstage Report, which is all exclusive news. Also, I review AEW and NXT. We have just a ton of shows every single day. I have news over there. But Fightful.com, FightfulWrestling.com, and YouTube.com/Fightful always help too.
There you go. And as if you want to check out any of our stuff, you can get Inside the Ropes magazine, InsideTheRopesMagazine.com. Issue 2 comes out this week with a Jerry Lawler interview and Roman Reigns on the cover. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. The website, ITRWrestling.com, where you can get all the news, and YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for interview content. We've got a 2-part with DDP that's went up. If you've ever spoke to DDP, you'll know he talks a lot. So there is obviously 2 parts to that one. And the second part goes up tonight. So, Sean, I hope you have a good week, whatever you got up to.
Yeah, I'm going to get a bunch of work done and hopefully mentally prepare myself. In 2 weeks, there is a giant UFC show. At the same time, there's Impact Bound for Glory. And then there's Hell in a Cell the night afterwards. And that is sandwiched with Raw and SmackDown on Friday and Monday. So it's gonna be a brutal one.
Get in the Red Bull.
Well, I drink Monster Energy. Pay me, Monster.
One day you're going to have that Monster Energy sponsorship. I'm going to have the Iron Brew sponsorship in Scotland. We'll be happy, men.
That's what I need.
Until then, though, everybody, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you soon.